This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Inkster's show at WRKF.org works if you are trying to reach us or if you have occasion to reach us online. Kevin Gallagher producing. Thank you for your support. It is essential to the well-being of public radio. Keeps the programs on the air. The trains rolling at 89.3 as they have since January 18th, 1980. In studio, Ava Level Heyman. She is Louisiana's Poet Laureate. Good morning to you, Ava.
Good morning.
A fixture in this community for many years and a talented person, certainly talented when it comes to words. And she has a new book, and she has been a prolific writer for many years. The latest is Eldest Daughter. Tell us about this one.
Eldest Daughter, in a way, is a culmination of everything I've been writing for years. Not just the poems, but all the way back to children's plays I was writing, small essays I was writing, all the classes I ever taught. I feel like I had to do all of those to squeeze this last one, Eldest Daughter, out. I wrote the poems over about 25 or 30 year period, and in and around writing many other things, and within the last year trying to make a collection out of them, as you can imagine, was very difficult because you're a different person, you know, every year to year slightly. Trying to make them go together was a trick, but I honestly feel a certain preoccupation lifted now that this is finally come together and left my hands.
Uh-huh. You're the daughter of a Baptist minister?
I am.
We just heard from Mr. Larry King, and he shares the view of Edwin Edwards and Carl Reiner, who was on this show not so long ago. They believe that once it's over on this earth, it's over for good. Do you share that assessment of life and the afterlife?
I have a wonderful ability that I think I must have that must have allowed me to survive my childhood, which is I can believe absolutely anything. So I believe what Carl Reiner, my hero, believes, that when it's over, and I also almost believe in angels and golden streets, and I think something like that where nobody could know this, every one of them is sort of about the equal truth.
Now, the Baptist faith would say otherwise, though. I think most fundamentalist Christians would believe that there is an afterlife and that what we do on this earth affects where we go after we die. You're smiling. As the daughter of a Baptist minister, do you believe part of that, some of that, or none of that?
I certainly believe that what we do on this earth matters. I can see a specific afterlife as a metaphor. If you do the best you can and you are an ethical person in this life, then you're in heaven. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you're in hell. And I could extend that over your life, or I could extend that into the years after your life, but Baptist back when I was one, which was the first 20 years of my life or so, are somewhat different than they are today. You wouldn't have said they were fundamentalist, but they were a little more elastic in the way they would talk about things.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Ava Level Heyman, who is Louisiana's Poet Laureate, named by Governor Bobby Jindal to this esteemed position. Now, she has written several books, one of them preceding Eldest Daughter, Kitchen Heat. I see the artwork of Mine Red Craighead on the cover of Kitchen Heat. She has had an influence on your life. How so?
I should reveal that Mine Red Craighead is Jim Inkster's cousin, which is a great surprise to me. Mine Rad is a very wonderful and influential artist, painter primarily, I found a book of hers that had some of her writing, but reproductions of her paintings, called The Mother Songs, very long time ago. And I was so excited by seeing these paintings that I sent her a small sheaf of poems that I had just written, which were not in any kind of book, not in any kind of chapbook. Found her publisher, sent it to her publisher. Months go by, and I hear from her. And she and I have been in touch ever since. She did a profound service, I think, of being one of the early women thinkers. I would say she's a philosopher as much as a visual artist, in understanding that feminism had to have a spiritual dimension to it. And like people say at the Red Shoes, women's spirituality is sometimes quite different than men's spirituality. And most of the religious systems that we have now are fairly male. They're patriarchal.
How is the spirituality different
for
a woman than a man?
I have found this very difficult to explain for a really long time. But Meinrad paints pictures of it in a way it seems to say it. And I think that may be part of the issue, is that it's not a verbal difference, that patriarchal religion has been explaining itself for a long, long time, and the Reformation particularly took the images away and said the word is the important thing. So it's all about words. And I don't know, maybe the imagistic side of it, the more of the unconscious, more mm-hmm. of the a global kind okay. of thinking.
Now, you go to New Mexico and see Meinrad frequently, don't you?
I do. I've seen her every summer for close to 30 years, I guess.
Really?
Uh-huh.
And she was in a monastery?
As a young woman, she was in a monastery in England, although she's from Arkansas. She was already a trained artist when she went in the monastery, and she painted. She was given a studio. It was Benedictine, so they that is pray, work. What's the other one?
Fast.
No. Don't look out the window. No. it was Benedictine, and they gave her a studio where she painted, and those paintings were sold, and that was the way she contributed to the financial security of the order she was in. So she painted all through that. And then when she left, she has told me about leaving the convent that she liked everything about being in the convent. She liked the communal living. She liked the hard work. And this is much more than just the painting. She loved the hours and the prayer, but the Benedictines didn't have enough understanding of the creative process, and she felt very stifled, and so she, as they say, went over the wall.
Yeah, well, and she's made quite an impact in the United States and internationally with her work, and you found her right here in Baton Rouge, and have seen her, I didn't know, for 30 years, so you know her much better than I. Meinrad is the former Charlene Craighead. Her mother and my father were siblings, and she is 22 years older than I am, so I've had limited exposure to her,
sure.
But of course I admire her work as well. But it's a cultivated taste. It's not for everybody.
It's not. That the painting that is formed the cover of Kitchen Heat is a pretty good example of her thinking, in a way. It is Artemis. Let me see it. It's a dream she had. I had a dream, and in the next room was Artemis, the Greek goddess Artemis, who has become one of Meinrad's pantheon, I had a dream. I went in the kitchen, and there she was, and we wrestled, and we were wrestling to the death, and I killed her. And she said, I woke up so stunned that I had killed Artemis that then I realized in the classical way of thinking, if you kill the god, you have internalized the god. And so she did a painting of that, which is extremely interesting. Two women, one of them with a lion skin slung around her, wrestling in a kitchen. One of them seems to have three arms. And then in front of them is a very ominous-looking wildcat or panther that is the only thing in the painting that looks straight out into our eyes. Meinrad is really very moved and interested in the animals and animal and human interaction.
What makes a good poet?
Oh, I would say there are many things that there are many kinds of good poets. For one thing, if I had to say one thing, I would say an intense relationship with language. To write a poem that is very interesting, you need to understand it, maybe not consciously, as a language event. So when you start talking in the poem, the language can run away with you. And we have such a splendid contemporary American English now that we speak, changing so fast, taking in so many words from other languages. It's a great delight to dance with the contemporary American English language. I taught a class once. I was teaching a beginning poetry class at LSU, and this is when I kind of focused in on this is what you need to make a poem alive. Very smart class, 12 or 15 juniors mostly. Sorry. And they were trying really hard. They would do everything I told them to do. They would get an idea, and they would try to make a poem out of it. And therefore, what they would come out with was a very small essay. If you're writing a poem, you can't really think of what you want to say ahead of time and then say it, because you haven't let the language have its part of the dance.
Were you surprised when Governor Jindal named you the Poet Laureate, or was that a foregone conclusion?
It wasn't a foregone conclusion. The governor doesn't select the governor appoints the Poet Laureate, but there's a very large committee that sifts through many nominations, and it's poets and people who teach poetry from all over the state, and they, about 20 people, they discuss this for a very long time, big packets of things that you send them. And I knew I was on the, I'm not sure I was supposed to know this, but I knew I was on the list, and I knew that I was, he had a shot at appointing me, which, thank you, Bobby Jindal.
Well, that was nice, and the advocate commended Governor Jindal for doing so, saying, Ava Level Heyman's annual Christmas poems have become a cherished Yuletide tradition among her friends, and a useful reminder that all good poetry is a gift worth saving. Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on with Ava.
Yes. Is your poetry influenced by, say, like the Romantics, Keats and Shelley, or maybe the metaphysical poets, you know, Donne, stuff like that?
Both. I've studied both of those eras of poetry, and I think probably the Romantic poet Coleridge, a little before Shelley and Keats, Coleridge and Wordsworth, and then after that come the Romantics, the High Romantics, Byron, Shelley, and Keats. Coleridge is believed that a poem was a resolution of opposites, and that's been a huge influence on me.
We'll take a short break, and then we'll return and resume the conversation with Ava Level Heyman, Louisiana Poet Laureate. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and we resume with Ava Level Heyman, Louisiana Poet Laureate. Her latest work is Eldest Daughter. She displays her mastery of the craft and engages us with the poetic gifts we've come to expect from her. And Eldest Daughter includes many references to her hometown of Baton Rouge. And Ava, why don't you give us a little reading of something that is in Eldest Daughter?
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks. The caller just now, Dan, I think, asked if I was affected by the romantic poets and the metaphysical poets. And one of the things, and I said yes, and one of the things the romantic poets were very firm about was that poetry should come out of the experience of the poet. And contemporary poetry still thinks that. You don't write about the English daisy and the long ago and the far away and the afterlife. You write about the things that have happened to you and what that was like for you. So that's why there are a lot of Baton Rouge allusions here. And I'm going to read a piece of a much longer poem. The poem is called Round Ball, and it came out of the 1980 basketball season, LSU basketball season. I had a tremendous crush on a player named Dwayne Scales, who didn't stay the next year. I think Dale Brown kind of eased him off the team. Didn't stay the next year to play on the team that became the Final Four team. But the springboard of this poem was an epitaph. Now, the event that made me write the poem is that my father died in the middle of that game, and he was at home watching it on TV, and I was in the basketball stadium when he died. And I always thought that is the most peculiar juxtaposition. And then when I heard an interview that had been taped with Dwayne Scales after that game, then suddenly the language started hitting me about the poem. So I'm going to read the title and then the epigraph, which quotes Dwayne Scales, and then a piece of section one. It's actually a good, like a five-parter poem. Round Ball, sportscaster. Dwayne Scales, SEC Tournament MVP. Great game, great game. Scales, I did. Yes, I did. And that was the CBS post-game interview. And this is part one. My father died watching the LSU-Georgia basketball game. Watched it on his homemade TV in Leland. My mother fixing supper in the next room. I was in the assembly center in Baton Rouge, so in a way you could say I was there when it happened. My son's braces came apart in the second half when he chewed ice from his Coke. I stared in my palm where he spit the wires and metal bands. They shone white in TV floodlights that cast no shadow. I saw right through my hand. Mama said later she thought he was yelling at the TV funny, not, "Dale Brown, you jughead, you're asking for a turnover, penetrate," like she'd come to expect, but, "Me, throw it here. I'm open. I'm open." And sure enough, when she went in to call him to eat, the screen was showing reruns of a tarpon rodeo in Corpus Christi, and he was the color of eggplant from his shoulders up, head flopped between his knees, knuckles dragging the floor beside his feet. When they fall like that, symmetrical, the mortician's finger snap popped like molars on buckshot. They never knew what hit them.
Dwayne Scales, the astronaut, they called him.
Oh, remember that? Dwayne the astronaut Scales.
Yeah, no, he was a fabulous college player, left school a year early, you're right. And last report was a bus driver in Dallas. Nothing wrong with that.
I sent this poem after I'd finished it. I sent it to Dale Brown, hoping he would send it to Duane Scales. But Dale Brown sent me a kind of a boilerplate letter back about, oh, we're so always so glad when we have fans in the stadium, blah, blah. And I don't think he read my poem.
You wrote that, obviously, at the time. So
yeah, spread over some years. I got people to, everyone has thought of this, but there's so many words about death in sports. Sudden death, overtime, many, many, many words about death. So I got people to give me basketball expressions that had death in them and was able to, you know, that sustained the poem, the language.
As I state, you write a great deal about where you are, including references to Phil's Oyster Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Phil's daughter, I can't remember Phil's name, but I always saw Phil in Phil's Oyster Bar when it was on Government Street. And his daughter called me after this poem was actually in the newspaper, after the Poet Laureate appointment was announced, and she called and said she read the poem and she wanted a copy of the book, and she wanted this autographed to give to her mother, that Phil was dead, and she wanted to give it to her mother. And I found that so moving because it's such a connection between real life and the poetry words on the page. My father was a big raw oyster eater, as is just about everyone in our families, and somehow the grief around his death would come back to me if I would go and eat raw oysters, and will to this day. And so that's why I'm writing about Phil's here.
Okay. So, Ava, what do you think about an 86-year-old man having a child?
I was in the studio and had the divine opportunity to hear Jim interviewing Larry King, and I have to say one thing I thought was I was stranded between the two voices of God. Oh, these voices were so wonderful. And I hope you heard the interview, and why did you ask me that?
Well, what was it Larry said? I think he said the girl must have really wanted it.
He said that. Jim asked him, now you fathered a child at
67,
and Edwin Edwards fathered a child at 86. What do you think about that? Maybe not seeing your children grow up. And essentially Larry King said, well, it was fine in my case because I was a whole lot younger, but in Edwin Edwards' case, all I can think of was the girl must have really wanted it.
Well, she's 34. And as I have noted, that if Edwin had gone 52 years in the other direction, his bride, his wife, would have been born in 1875.
Wow.
So they're very happy. They have a new child, Eli Wallace Edwards, and they will be with Larry King Sunday at the LSU Union. But also, Edwin Edwards is slated to be with us tomorrow. So we'll talk about life at 86 with a beautiful young wife and a handsome young son.
You'll have to ask him the question you just asked me. Do you think about this?
Well, Larry said his father died when he was nine, when Larry was nine. My father died when I was eight. So sometimes you're generally okay. Larry and I, I'm sure, have had our issues as a result of that. But life is tough for everybody when you get
down to it.
Yeah. So Edwin Edwards, he said that he would do an interview with me every year around his birthday, so he's keeping his word this year, until I die. And his son, Eli, I presume when he graduates from high school, Edwin will be just short of his 104th birthday, so it could happen.
It could. If somebody was going to live to 104, I would think Edwin would be a really good candidate.
He certainly
how to do it.
Beaten the odds before, hasn't he? Well, the great book from Ava Level Heyman, her latest, is Eldest Daughter, from LSU Press, just out. just out, and she is the Poet Laureate for Louisiana. How long's your term?
2 years.
2 years.
And I'd like to say that the launch of this book will be September 15th in the music school in the recital hall, 3 o'clock.
Thank you, Abe.